creatures was moving with one purpose. The army was made up of very small blue men, some wearing pointy caps, but most with their red hair uncovered. None was more than 6 inches high. They lined up and looked down into this new place, and then, swords waving, raised a battle cry. But it sounded as though every single small warrior had a battle cry of his own and would fight anyone who tried to take it away from him.
Knock, muck, figo! Gee, such a kicking! Big jobs! Knock, muck, figo! Wahey! Wahey, you sell your buggin'!
The people who lived in Locre didn't think much about the world outside. The world outside, though, thought about them. A black coach rattled across the moorlands. It was travelling light, but darkness came with it. It seemed to be dragging the night behind it. The horses were black, and each had a black plume between its ears. There was a black plume at each corner of the coach as well. On the top of the moor, it creaked to a halt. The horses stood still. The coachman sat hunched over his reins, waiting. Four figures flew just above the clouds in the silvery moonlight, and by the sound of their conversation, someone was annoyed.
You let it get away.
It was wounded, Lacrimosa.
I really hate those things. They're so soppy. If I could burn like that, I wouldn't just skulk around looking pretty. Why do they do it?
They're an evolutionary cul-de-sac, Lackey. Marooned survivors on the Sea of Progress.
Then I'm doing them a favor by killing them. Listen to your father, dear. Life can't be all fun. And we did let you drop rocks on the pixies. I really hate them. Are they a dead end, too?
Not dead enough.
The coachman stirred as the voices descended through the clouds, and then some figures were standing a little way off. The coachman clambered down and opened the coach door as they approached.
Igor? Yes, master. I told you to take the plumes off the coach, you idiot.
Gotta have black plumes, master. It's traditional.
Remove them at once. What will people think?
Yes, mistress.
The one addressed as Igor slammed the door.
Thod,
he said to himself. The wording began, "You are cordially invited," and was in that posh runny writing that was hard to read. Nanny Og grinned and tucked the card back on the mantelpiece. It was a damned good invite, she thought, especially the gold edging. She wandered over, opened the back door, and sniffed the air. There was definitely a taste of spring on the wind. Change was in the air. She could feel it. She closed the door. In the trees, leafless and scratchy against the sky, something rustled its wings and chattered as a veil of dark crossed the sky. In her cottage a few miles away, the witch Agnes Knit was in two minds about her new pointy hat. Agnes was generally in two minds about anything, and as she observed herself critically in the mirror, she sang a song, and she sang in harmony with herself. It was happening more and more these days. Perdita had rather a reedy voice, but she insisted on joining in. Those who are inclined to casual cruelty say that inside a fat girl is a thin girl and a lot of chocolate. Agnes's thin girl was Perdita. And Perdita hated going around inside Agnes, who she regarded as a fat, pathetic, weak-willed blob. Agnes tended to obey rules, Perdita didn't. Agnes thought that a dumpy girl should not wear a tall, pointy hat, especially with black, but Perdita liked black. Perdita thought black was cool. Agnes thought that black wasn't a good colour for the circumferentially challenged, and that cool was a dumb word only used by people whose brains wouldn't fit a spoon. She stopped examining her pointiness in the mirror and looked around the cottage that had been McGrath Garlick's and was now hers. Her gaze took in the expensive gold-edged card on the mantelpiece. She adjusted the hat as best she could.